Marvel's Jessica Jones, Episode 2, a.k.a. Crush Syndrome, is over, but we are just getting started here on Post Show Recaps. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Episode 2 of our Jessica Jones coverage here on Post Show Recaps. I'm Josh Wigler, and I'm joined here by a man who, now I know his weakness, Kevin Mahadeo.
Ah, you discovered it. You can't tell the world, though. If you tell the world, it's all over for me.
So don't tell the world that Kevin's weakness is...
No!
It's okay. I edited it out. I redacted it. It's gone.
Yeah, good. I know your weakness. It's pizza.
Nope.
Everyone knows that,
well,
though.
But it's also my strength. You know?
It's like a reverse Popeye. It's your weakness and your strength,
it's
pizza.
Like, it's, you know, it has its negative effects, but it's also my pleasure. It's my joy. You know.
It has mainly negative effects. It just tastes really good.
It tastes so good. I think that outweighs most of the negative effects.
This is true.
Yeah. So it's a hobby. It's fine. It's good. We're all right. We're okay. I'm fine. How are you, Kevin? Are you fine? It's been so long since last we spoke.
Yeah, I know. So many minutes since we spoke last.
Yeah,
how
many minutes are in 5 hours it's been?
Is it 5 hours? 60 times five? That's 300 minutes.
Oh, look at you. Look at you with your math brain.
Yeah, woo.
I'm impressed. So here we are, talking episode 2 of Jessica Jones. As we said in our first podcast, which if you haven't listened to it, go listen to that. That's already up on postshowrecaps.com. We're going to be doing the daily podcast thing here for Jessica Jones every weekday. This is your first weekday podcast, so here we are. We're going to make this happen. Episode 2, a.k.a. Crush Syndrome. Jessica Jones' mobile is still moving apace. Kevin, how do you feel about this thing so far?
Well, when an episode starts off and Lester Freeman from The Wire is there, I'm in. I'm good. I'm happy.
Like, yeah, typically you're
that
in.
That makes me excited.
Typically you're in for a good time. Lester Freeman, best character on The Wire.
Oh, for sure. That's definitely my favorite character on The Wire, without question.
I know a lot of people say Omar. A lot of people, you know, love Stringer Bell. I get it. Those guys are fantastic. I'm a Lester Freeman man.
Yeah, 100%. And when he made that that crack where he's just like, I love antiques.
I know,
antique miniature furniture?
Yeah, wow, that's so good. That's definitely a Wire shout-out. So yeah, anytime you can get Clark Peters is the name of the actor. He's playing a character, Oscar Clemens, who is an NYPD detective. This is according to Wiki. So that's cool. That's going to be fun. I got to imagine he's going to be popping up more than just this one-off appearance.
I hope so. Every time I see him now and then, like I saw him, he was in John Wick for like a hot minute.
Yeah, he was.
He was in True Detective for like another hot minute. So right. I'm hoping he's more than a hot minute in this one. I'm hoping he's in a couple hot minutes. So
I gotta imagine he's hanging around. You can't just have him here just for like one quick interrogation scene. And it seems like they're setting some sort of dynamic up with Jessica Jones and like the actual authorities. So, I mean, she seems legit. She's got all of her paperwork. The only thing you can charge her with is making a goddamn living in this goddamn city. But
which I felt so close.
I know. New York's a tough town.
It is.
But I think that they're definitely setting up some sort of opposition there. Maybe it's, you know, the kind of thing where they can become friends and hug it out by the end of this thing. But at least as it's starting, I think we're seeing some opposition between her and the cops. And I certainly hope that he's the face of it, because the more Clark Peters we get on our television screens, just generally, the better.
I agree wholeheartedly.
So by the time we're recording this, we said in the last one that the interactivity between us and the listeners is going to be a little bit limited, because we are going to be recording the first crop of episodes, the first crop of podcasts. Hopefully we are going to be doing a bunch of them this weekend so that we can make sure that we're on schedule. But people have already listened to the first one by the time we're recording this. So within the 5 hour span that we clicked close on that podcast and I just hit record again, Kevin, people have already heard what you and I have had to say about the premiere.
It makes me so happy and thankful for everyone listening in. Like, it's weird to like, you posted it and then all of a sudden, like, 27 notifications are on my phone. I'm like, oh my God, people listen to me.
Yeah.
Like,
people are listening. And we already have several binging Billies, self-confessed binging Billies.
Including my roommate, apparently. I'm being accused of my roommate as a binging Billy.
I think that your roommate is binging Billy. I think that we can reveal the secret now.
It's true. It is. I try to keep him on lockdown, but he comes on in and tries to tell him what's going on, eh?
Yeah, is binging Billy the one in the tidy whities who's hanging out with Robin?
No, that's Gus. That is my dog, Gus. He put him in tidy whities because we can't take him for a walk.
I laughed really hard at that when they revealed that Robin was the name of the woman upstairs who's making all of the noise. What you people don't know is that Kevin's girlfriend who lives with him is also named Robin.
Yeah, we cracked up and I immediately turned and looked at her when that scene happened.
I was dying when that happened. That was so funny. So that's all really good. But yeah, we've got a lot of people who've already watched all of Jessica Jones. Our Philly, who is a great friend of the podcast, binging our Philly. Philly. He's already watched it. He finished it last night, so he's still around for the ride. This is fun, though. I like the Binging Billies because they can listen along to you and I get everything so horribly wrong.
Yeah, just laugh at us as we make our wrong predictions. Although, I feel like one possible prediction or guess or whatever we made, I mean, you made the thing like you don't think they're going to go Hellcat with Patsy Walker, but I mean, seeing those bruises, I was just like, oh, wait. Like, I feel like that is setting up that she's out doing some, you know, vigilantism and stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we end her in the episode. She's doing Krav Maga with, like, the Israeli Desmond.
Yeah.
so she's definitely, you know, she's learning how to not just push the button, but kick the button's ass.
Yeah, so I kind of like that, you know, we thought that, oh, maybe they wouldn't do that. But no, they seem that they are definitely trying to set up her as a possible vigilante Hellcat, which is cool.
That's cool. As long as she gets the cat costume, you know how I feel.
Well, you know, it's funny because, like, this is the same deal with Daredevil where I was so used to no costumes. It'd be weird at the end to have her put on a costume. I mean, I don't not want that to happen.
Right.
But if it does happen, I'm interested to see how much you hate it considering what happened with Daredevil.
I know. I really did not care for the Daredevil costume. If anyone listened to our Daredevil podcasts, you probably remember that. I wasn't a fan. I hope that they improve it for season two. We'll see. I mean, so far there's no costume action going on here on Jessica Jones, unless you want to count Kristen Ritter's amazing scarf action.
Right.
Like, that's really good. She's got great scarf game.
The scarf and the jacket, the combo is fantastic. I'm just like, damn, you looking stylish.
Yeah, she's awesome. I love her look. She's great. I think that that's something that we didn't talk about in the premiere podcast. We can talk about it now. One of the things that I really love about Kristen Ritter is just the way she looks. She's so unique looking. You know, she's got these really sharp, exaggerated features, like the really exaggerated mouth. She's got like this really sharp nose. She kind of looks like a comic book character come to life.
Yeah, it's true. She's also, like, I'm pretty sure she is very tall, but she definitely looks very tall.
Yeah.
Just on screen, she looks, you know, she has a presence to her, which is really cool.
Yeah, she just has this really cool aesthetic, you know. It's great. It's unusual, but I really dig it, and I love the way that she's just, like, really, you know, how she carries herself, how she, like, her posture, how she positions herself, how she just kind of, like, stares at you with this look of, like, you're such an idiot.
Yeah, that snark and sarcasm she has.
Yeah, it's great. So she's really good. She's really, you know, not that she had to do a lot to win me over to begin with. I was pretty ready to be won over. As I said, I loved her on Breaking Bad. But she's fantastic so far. I'm really digging her as Jessica Jones.
I actually, while watching, there was a point where she was on screen. I turned to my girlfriend and was just like, remember when she got Jesse hooked on heroin?
Yeah. No spoilers. No, we don't need to go all the way in there.
Okay.
No, that's fine. That's fine. No one really knows. Maybe some people know. Who
cares? I mean, Breaking Bad is how old is this?
No, stop it.
All right.
You know, the bigger deal stuff has not been spoiled, so we'll
that's true.
We'll leave it there. But yeah, this is a great episode. This is a big coming out party for Luke Cage, obviously, by the end of this thing. That's the cliffhanger of the episode. If you want to call it a cliffhanger, is the revelation that he is unbreakable, which is like
you give a whole new meaning to the words abs of steel.
Yeah. His actual line is, you can't fix me. I'm unbreakable. And I am waiting. It's got to be coming soon. I am waiting. Maybe by the time you guys are listening to it, that the unbreakable Luke Schmidt, the mashup with the Kimmy Schmidt theme song. You got to imagine
that. Oh, my God. That's amazing. I hope that happens. I hope unbreakable Luke Schmidt happens.
Yeah. Unbreakable.
Yeah. He's a breakable, damn it.
Sweet Christmas. Yeah. You can just it makes itself. It's great.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It writes itself. So internet, get on it. Yeah. If you're listening to this, please, if it hasn't happened, make it happen.
Hey, shut up Tim. Shut up Tim on Twitter. If you are listening to this, make that happen. In fact, shut up Tim. Tim All In, he wrote to us already. He gave us a couple of questions for this podcast to tackle. The first one being, why is there so much more boning in Jessica Jones than there was in Daredevil? So far it doesn't seem like a ton of boning. I guess maybe he's a binging Billy, is there a ton of boning on the way? There was a decent amount of boning in the first episode.
There was. I feel like, I feel like at the end of this episode, you know, it's setting up certainly Jessica and Luke some more.
Right.
And from the comics, we know that'll continue.
Right.
But I think part of the reason why it's more than Daredevil is that they're different genres. We talked about how this is a noir piece, and like a stable of noir is basically boning.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's the reason why we're seeing more of that than Daredevil. Daredevil is very much more of an action piece, and we saw a lot more fight scenes.
Right.
we don't see as many fight scenes in this one. Although we did get a great, great fight moment in this that I absolutely adored.
Yeah.
In that bar.
The rugby fight?
Yeah, like, Luke Cage was just, his bored expression of, like, not even caring at these people because he's just like, ugh, I don't have time for this nonsense, was perfect.
It was really casual, just the way he systematically knocked out all these rugby guys.
Exactly. Like, he did the, like, one punch that was, like, barely even, like, him trying, and, like, when he got smashed in the bottle, that eye roll was perfect. Perfection.
It's just, like, more annoying than anything. So,
yeah, exactly. So,
I love that. Love that.
So, yeah, I think that's the reason why. In my personal opinion, I think it fits the genre, is what it boils down to.
Yeah, so I loved all of that. I like how he like, gets hit in the hand with a bottle, doesn't even flinch. Somebody bashes it over his head, doesn't even bat an eye. And then someone's, like, jabbing him with a broken bottle. That was a kill move.
That guy was going to try to murder him.
Yeah, the rugby dude, Andre, was so turned up that he was going to kill Luke Cage. Good thing that Luke Cage is the unbreakable Luke Schmidt.
Yeah. Sweet Christmas.
Yeah, Christmas.
I'm never going to be able to not think about this, like, weird techno remix. Whatever it is, like, the voice thing they do, that name escapes me.
Yeah. Can you imagine Luke Cage, the body of Luke Cage, Mike Coulter, with the voice of Ellie Kemper?
That'd make for a very different show. Although a very delightful show about Luke Cage just trying to make it in the city. There's similarities there.
There's similarities for sure.
Yeah.
All right, so let's dive into the episode a little bit more. We get this, you know, we know that by the end of the episode, Jessica and Luke are gonna be together, and they're gonna be bonding over the fact that they both have superpowers, that they're both super strong. But it starts off on difficult footing between the two of them because Luke has been cornered by the police. The police have come to the bar. Jessica is obviously really embroiled in everything that happened with Hope and her parents in the elevator. So it's off to a bad start at the beginning of this episode.
Yeah, I mean, you can't blame Luke. I mean, he just met this person. As far as he knows, he doesn't know if she's been taking pictures of him. Immediately, like, the next day, cops are coming over, showing him all this, like, she's been taking pictures of you. And it's just like, oh, good God. Like, it's something no one wants to deal with. So I can't, you know, you can't begrudge him for feeling the way he does once that revelation happens.
Yeah, I mean, his whole motto is, I don't do drama. This is the definition of drama. So,
yeah,
not happy.
Which is why he was so, like, you know, fight you dramatic. And he was just like, I don't deal with this.
Yeah, not my thing, not my favorite. So he's not pumped about that. But we spend a lot of this episode with Jessica, who is, you know, she's got a little bit of the Luke Cage thing on the side in terms of a side story, but most of her story is trying to figure out what's going on with Kilgrave, because she believed that Kilgrave had died in some kind of accident, and this episode sort of shines a light on what happened, or at least from her perspective, what happened, which was, we know that she has been under Kilgrave's influence, that he was able to manipulate her mind and everything like that, but it seemed like in one moment at least, she had broken free enough that she was walking out into the middle of the street, and Kilgrave followed her and was trying to have control over her, but it wasn't working, and somehow, some way, a bus just flipped over him.
Yeah, I was wondering that too. Like, that bus went over him. I think my girlfriend questioned, like, wait, does he have telekinesis? And I'm like, not as far as I know.
Right, but that felt like a telekinesis thing, or it felt like, you know, we talk about sometimes how these, you know, how the Netflix shows, they exist side by side with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, it's the kind of thing where you could imagine the Hulk throwing that bus.
Yeah.
Like, where did that bus come from? It wasn't just like a random accident.
It felt like it felt like something was there, something happened, and I'm sure there's more to the story. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, the way they do these flashbacks is piece by piece. We're learning the information as we go.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's questions there that hopefully will be answered. Otherwise, it's just a bus that somehow flipped out of nowhere and avoided him.
No, it feels like the kind of thing where that's a really pivotal moment, and we'll probably be touching back with that a few times. We'll see that from different perspectives and see how it plays out a little bit more. Binging Billy nodding along with approval, telling us that, yes, that's absolutely what's happening.
I'm still waiting for the moment. Like, I as we mentioned, I'm a big Doctor Who fan, so I'm still waiting for the moment of just seeing David Tennant, because this one would be like, the Doctor, why are you doing this, Doctor?
Yeah. How do you like how they're doing Kilgrave right now? How they're doing David Tennant's character, where they're really, you know, we're not seeing his face yet, but he's absolutely in the picture. There's the scene with Jessica in the subway, and she's just riding along. Everything's fine. Everything's good. And then there's the flash of purple, and he's there, and he says something like, come back to me. And she like smashes the window. We see him at the end of the episode in a very creepy scene as well. Do you like that they're kind of teasing this out?
I do. It's very interesting because that moment at the end too, with where he goes in to that house with that family and puts the kids in the closet, like this, he is already, in my opinion, and we can discuss this a little bit, I think he's the most evil Marvel cinematic villain out of anyone we've seen.
The most evil I mean, Red Skull was a Nazi.
Well, Red Skull was a Nazi, but like it's almost like Red Skull, you know, Nazism is like this philosophy. There's a whole group of people.
Careful, Kevin. Into it. Careful, Kevin.
I'm not saying Red Skull is not evil. He's very evil. But like I think what makes like a Purple Man like twisted and almost more evil than that is just, well, not more evil than that, is that I feel like he's a person that people can become.
Right.
Like he has this power that allows him control over everyone. And it's almost like he got so corrupted by it that he just takes what he wants and he doesn't care about anyone and ever. And I feel like what makes him terrifying, what makes him kind of evil, is that any one of us could possibly become that, get corrupted by that power and be like this.
Right.
So I think there's like, you know, there's a level there that we don't see. Like, why is he this way? And I feel like with Red Skull, why is he evil? Well, he's a Nazi. That's the answer. With this guy, why is he evil? It's just like, I don't know. It's almost like the Joker. Like, why is the Joker that way? Who knows?
Right.
And that makes him, in my opinion, like more scary, more terrifying.
Yeah.
You don't always, you know, they're very big, especially with Marvel, on giving the villains pathos, on giving them like ethos about why they're doing what they do, about, you know, what their actual core is. I feel like we haven't seen someone who's just pure evil. And I kind of like that. I kind of like that we have this character that's this way, because it kind of gives like a, it makes them more scary. Like, we don't know why they're doing this, and we never will understand that.
Yeah. I mean,
but that's just my two cents here.
Well, there's still so much more to learn about the guy before I can like come right out and say pure evil, just because we don't know his side of things. I can't imagine there's much he could say or do to convince us otherwise, you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of hoping there isn't. Like, yeah. I kind of like the idea. Like, I think that's what a Joker is appealing, is because he doesn't have rhyme or reason to
like
what he does.
Like, unapologetically bad.
Yeah, and I feel like that's unique. You don't see a lot of that, because people usually say like, oh, cartoonishly evil villains are bad. But the trope has gone so into reverse of making villains, you know, so like have so much more depth that this is unique now. Like, the idea of a cartoon, he's not cartoonish. He's just, I mean, I don't know. It is pretty terrible what he did to the children, but they didn't do it cartoony. It makes it unique and terrifying to me. Like, it's something that used to be standard that is now so rare, it's unique.
There's a great interview with David Tennant in Vanity Fair where he talks about how one of the things about Kilgrave, that his powers of total control over others, which he often uses to go after young women or get a seat at his favorite restaurant, it's scary because they come with a certain wish fulfillment that makes him horribly appealing. He says, of course, that's something that we all slightly, perhaps at times, start to fantasize about. Maybe that's why he's particularly terrifying to people. And it's interesting because, you know, you do think, like, this question always comes up, or maybe it doesn't always come up anymore, but like when you're younger, or when you're, you know, having like chit chat with somebody and you're just starting to get to know someone, you have that, you know, very generic icebreaker question of like, what superpower would you have if you could have any superpower?
Right.
And it's like, I would walk through walls, I could be invisible, I would go rob a bank. And there is something about like the Kilgrave power set that is like, wow, I would love it if people would just do whatever I told them to. And when you start to think that through a little bit more, that type of power, it's very easy to see how that takes you down a really, really terrifying path. And I really like that that's what we're getting to see. And I think it's done so well at the end of this episode when we're seeing Kilgrave go into the apartment. He goes in there and he says, you want me over for dinner? He's like, absolutely. And, you know, he says, kids should be seen, not heard, if seen at all.
Yeah. And then, like, the mom even was just kind of like, what are you doing? And he was just like, they'll be fine. And she's like, they'll be fine.
They'll be great. And so, like, you know, there's something to that. Like, if there's people, like, how great would Jessica feel if she could actually just go and tell the people upstairs to shut up and they would never talk again?
Yeah.
They would never make noise again. But that sort of power, that sort of exertion of dominance, is a really, really frightening thing to be put into practice, and in the hands of a guy who's probably already pretty twisted at a baseline level, that's really horrible.
I think that's what, you know, it's like I was saying earlier, it is that, like, I feel like the horror of Kilgrave and the horror of a lot of certain characters is that you can see yourself becoming that, because that power can corrupt you so badly. When you have that much power, it's easy to just fall into it. And even if you try to start doing good, like, you can fall into a bad situation. Like, oh, I'll use my powers for good if I can tell people, you know, whatever I want. Then it starts, you know, first you're just like, hey, robber, stop shooting those people. But right. The next moment you're going upstairs to tell the people upstairs, hey, shut up, you know. And you start kind of being manipulated by your own power, and it's a dangerous, dangerous thing.
Slippery slope.
Yeah, it's very much a slippery slope, you know. And I think that's what makes superheroes themselves interesting, is because if you look at it, they're the exception. Like, I feel like with superheroes, they're the people who actually have this power and they chose not to use it for their own benefit and not be corrupted by it. And I think that's what the appeal of superheroes are, is that they show us that, oh my God, maybe we can be better than these bad guys.
Right. Also, leg of lamb for dinner, sign me up.
You know, I'm not the biggest lamb fan. I think it's because I had too much lamb growing up and mostly curried. So I never really got onto the lamb train, sadly.
Get on the lamb train. Get back. Come back to us.
Come back to the lamb.
So let's try and piece together a little bit of what's going on with Kilgrave, because Jessica, she goes on a few assignments throughout the episode that sort of reveals what was going on. She finds out about this guy who is the ambulance driver who had he has a dialysis machine, and it was, you know, paid for by some sort of angel, according to this guy's mom. We find out that he went away for 3 weeks. He came back. He had neither of his kidneys anymore, and we learn from this guy Dr. Corrado, right, who it seems like he took the kidneys out, gave them to Kilgrave. Yep. Was legitimately injured in this bus accident, and it sounds like he just spent weeks healing up and having these people do his bidding.
Well, what's more interesting, and again shows the type of person he is, you know, doctor says, like, he could have been fine with just a one kidney, but no, he wanted both.
Yeah, he wanted and he's going to need new ones in a couple of years.
Yeah, that's what I mean about the evilness of it. Like, it's just like, good God, like, that poor guy, like, you know, that poor ambulance driver, you look at him and he's asking Jessica to kill him. It's just like, oh God, that's so dark. It's so dark.
That was a really great scene. Yeah, where the bus driver or the ambulance driver was writing down on the sheet of paper. He starts writing down KIL, and Jessica says what the audience is saying at the time.
Yeah,
like, yeah, Kilgrave. I get it. I know. I'm on it already. And then it just says, "Kill me."
Kill me. Yeah.
That was great. That was really great. Where it's like, oh boy, so this guy is a real life wrecker.
Yeah, no kidding. And yeah, it's so different. It's so different from what they did with Daredevil, but I kind of love that, because like we said, Kingpin wasn't what you expected him to be. And then with this, it's like, oh man, no, this guy is, he is a terrible, terrible person.
Right. I mean, again, still, there's still time to find out if there's another side to the story.
That's true.
But right now, just the things that we are hearing about, and the fact that that he already comes with this real legendary quality in Jessica's life. The fact that he is, you know, somebody who really effed with her head for a while, and she knows that coming into the series, and the fact that that's such a big piece of it right from the jump, whereas with Wilson Fisk and Matt Murdock and Daredevil, that was more of a build. I think that that's a big difference, too, just the fact that we already know that Kilgrave is no good, and Jessica knows just from the jump that this guy is, you know, the personification of a nightmare.
Yeah, these two have a connection already, a backstory, whereas Daredevil and Wilson Fisk never really met until much later into the series, actually. So yeah, that's definitely a big difference. I think, like, having a connection already to the villain definitely opens itself up to a more unique story as well, which is cool. You don't want to see the same story over and over again with these series, so
yeah,
it's pretty awesome.
You gotta imagine we're gonna get, like, you know, Kilgrave's gonna have his rabbit in the snowfield type of moment where he's going to, you know, there's something from earlier in his life that explains the way that the reason why he is who he is, but I just can't imagine any of that justifying the shit that we've seen from him so far.
Well, what happened was that he used to be a Gallifreyan and was responsible for the death of all his people in the Daleks, and then went insane. And
did you just Doctor Who me?
I did Doctor Who you.
I know sports better than I know Doctor Who. So.
That is a sad state of affairs. Yeah, I know nothing about sports.
Yeah, I know. That's how little I know about Doctor Who, but I recognize the word Dalek.
Yes, yeah. That is a thing.
And I also just recognized what you were doing to me. So I don't know. Maybe you can mind control some Doctor Who knowledge into me by the end of this thing.
I would hope. I would. That would make me happy if I could just educate you a slightly bit more on Doctor Who.
Just a tiny bit. All right. So why do you think he's holing up at this person's apartment? Why do you think he's taking this family over? And how long will he be there? And how long will these kids be stuck in the closet?
God, that part, the kids, I don't know. I mean, Jessica mentioned the further he goes away, the control weakens. Hopefully he won't stay there too long.
You know, the other thing, too, is, like, it's actually a real testament to his abuse of this mind control power, because if he was smarter about it, if he was savvier about it, he would tell the kid who says, I have to go to the bathroom, he'd say, all right, go to the bathroom, do absolutely nothing else but use the bathroom, and then come back and go into the closet. Otherwise, she's peeing in the closet, and while he's about to eat some leg of lamb, it's going to smell like urine in there.
That's true. He did not think that far ahead.
He didn't think it through.
I think that it shows, though, like, he just doesn't care about anyone else. Like, he just stole someone's two kidneys. You know, he did this to these kids and his family. He just doesn't care about anyone else. Like, he doesn't care about anything. And it's just like, whatever, go lock yourself in the closet. I don't care.
So how about this? Is that definitely pee at the end of the episode? Is she definitely peeing through the door? Or is this kid secretly Alex Mack, and this is a dark, gritty reboot of the Alex Mack mythos?
I would be behind the Alex Mack thing, except it's not silver. Come on, man. Alex Mack turns into goo is silver.
But if it's a dark, gritty reboot, it doesn't have to be the same color, and
it would
be a darker liquid. Maybe. I'm holding out hope. Alex Mack versus Kilgrave would be good.
Oh, I would love to see an Alex Mack reboot, now that you said it. Yeah. I mean, so many of them are happening.
Don't will that into existence. we've done a bad thing. But yeah, so there's a lot TBD with Kilgrave. I don't know why he picked this place. I don't know why he needs to go here. He's just traveling around. Maybe he just likes to explore. Maybe it's like this is his version of Airbnb. He just likes to hop around and try different spots.
I think that's what it is that he doesn't have to have an apartment of his own. He can take whatever he wants. Yeah. And if he gets bored, he'll just go somewhere else. So I think it's really like he looked for a nice place, was like, this has a nice view, and then just went to these people's apartment. I was just like, this is my place for now. Yeah. And then he'll go somewhere else, whatever he wants to.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see where that's shaken out. Where else should we? Where should we go to next? You want to talk about Trish? You want to talk about what's going on with her?
Yeah, we can definitely talk more about that. We kind of talked about it earlier where so she has a backstory here that we're kind of seeing where, you know, with those bruises, some people might think at first it was obviously like, oh, maybe she's being abused or something,
right?
Which I think that there's a little hint of that anyway. But then, like, I feel...
Where's the hint?
Well, she says like, oh, you know, you sound like your mom or something like that. She makes like a mom crack to her.
Right. Jessica calls, says to Trish, like, you're sounding like your mom. And Trish is really deeply offended.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, that was more than just a general, like when people say like, you look like your dad, I'm just like, how dare you?
Right.
Like, there's more like that reaction is more. And when you see the bruises, you can kind of feel like the audience didn't know where those bruises were from at first. So I feel like you can kind of put it together that way. But like we see the bruises are from her training and stuff. So I kind of like that they're leaning towards this vigilantiness of her. And I wonder if a part of it is like, have they heard about Daredevil? Is that why she's doing it? She hears about someone out there doing this and she's like, oh man, maybe I should stand up for myself too. Or I don't know. That's a curious thing to be like, how would they incorporate the legend of the Daredevil into this at
right.
this point?
No, that's interesting. Cause I mean, as we said in the last podcast, usually the way Marvel does these things is the time that the thing is released, the time the movie or the show is released, that's the time in the Marvel Cinematic Universe it's taking place. So
right.
Daredevil was what, you know, it was March or something like that, or
yeah.
April. So it was the springtime. Here we are in the fall. You know, it's been a summer. A summer has passed since Daredevil, since Wilson Fisk, and all of that happened. So you got to imagine that the myth of Daredevil is out on the streets. I do wonder if we'll actually see on the show, you know, not just the reflection of it in terms of it's kind of, you know, an inspiration for people only loosely, or if there's like going to be direct call outs to Daredevil, I think will be.
Well, every time they bring up a lawyer, it always makes me feel like are they going to mention Murdoch?
And, yeah. When is Senior Froggy coming in?
Exactly. Like, you know, I feel like every time a lawyer talk comes up, I'm always just like, well, but not yet.
Yeah. So Trish Trish seems to be, she even has that line with Jessica at the end of the episode when she got the alias investigations glass window for the door. She says, don't worry about protecting me. I know you want to shut me out. You don't need to. I don't need your protection. And we're seeing why, because she is training with who I called Israeli Desmond.
Yes.
She's learning Krav Maga. She's doing all this cool stuff. What is the deal? So she's just, why is she taking this upon herself? I guess she's trying to go vigilante. Is there a reason behind it? Is she just inspired by the Daredevil thing, or is there something deeper? I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I'm hoping that we do get into reasoning about why she's doing it. I'm certain it could be something as just simple as, she's a personality on TV, and she's famous, and famous people can get swarmed by paparazzi and stuff
like
that.
So she wants to defend herself.
Yeah, she wants to protect herself. It could be something as simple as that. Like, personally, as a nerd, I'm just kind of like, oh, I hope it's a Daredevil thing or some kind of weird thing about being a vigilante, but we'll see.
Yeah, that could be it. She's just like, I've got really scary fans.
Yeah, like, it could be more realistic than we're taking it.
Yeah, I like that. So we'll see where that goes. I hope that we get to see. I mean, I gotta imagine you're gonna get Jessica and Trish doing some sort of fight with somebody at some point. You gotta imagine they've got some sort of back-to-back scene that's gonna happen.
I hope that's the case. I mean, it makes me wonder, too, like, how much Luke will play into this as well, and, like, whether, we had a scene of them semi-teaming up in a fight, but if that will be a situation moving forward about, like, if there's going to be a big brawl, with Patsy, or Trish, sorry.
It's really hard. It's that stuff. We'll get used to it.
Yeah, Trish, Jessica, and Luke, but we'll see, I guess, where that goes. Like I said, that this is not as action-packed as action-y as Daredevil is, because it's a different type of show. So we'll see how they play this stuff out, I think.
Totally. So another big story in this episode is Jessica is able to get Jerry Hogarth on her side in terms of representing Hope, the young girl who shot her parents in the elevator because she was being controlled by Kilgrave. And Jerry was basically like, I need proof. If you can convince me, I will take her on, or at least she accepts Jessica's deal, because Jessica also tosses in, I'll owe you a favor. And
yes.
Who knows what the hell that is. That's very open-ended. She might come to regret that offer.
Well, if Jerry is aware of Jessica's superpoweriness, then that having someone like that owe you a favor can go a long way, I think.
Right. So that's interesting. We'll see how that goes. It seems like she does know about that stuff, right?
I don't know. They have it like...
In the last episode, when Jessica, in the first episode, when she lifts up the car and then the guy calls
that's right.
And isn't Jerry basically like, look, I mean, I would love to have seen that.
Yeah, because she's just like, you don't actually have laser eyes. So I think she knows that Jessica has powers, but may not be too sure what exactly they are.
Right. But Jerry is on board by the end of this thing, because Jessica is able to track down the doctor who she puts on the phone with Jerry. And I guess that was enough. That was convincing enough.
Which was surprising to me. Even when that happened, I was just like, another guy, I guess someone else to corroborate the story, but like, I was like, that's still just a dude who's just like, yep, a guy mind controlled me.
That's a little bit of a leap for me. Of just like, because if it was me, like, I could just like tell you, Kevin Mahadeo, I could go to Kevin and be like, hey, so I got to convince this person of a thing. Can you just tell them this story that I'm telling you right now, and you just sound really convincing, and they will totally buy it? It's basically that was what it was. But I mean,
yeah, but yeah. So I don't know. Maybe she has an ulterior motive. I don't know. I guess we'll see. I can't imagine what her ulterior motive is. Losing case. I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know, because this is how do you win this case? Once again, we need to get Antonio Mazzaro on the line here with his legal expertise, but I don't know what sort of case can be made here. It seems pretty point blank that this girl just shot her parents.
Yep.
So
that's pretty much what happened.
And Jerry says, I don't represent losers, so
yeah,
good luck with that.
I don't know. I mean, Murdoch has done some stuff. Foggia and Matt have done their own like lawyering. Yeah. So maybe she has the same type of lawyering abilities.
She'll have some lawyering up her sleeve. But we also
that's how much I know about law. I'm like lawyering. That's just the thing they do.
Yeah, just lawyer it up. But Jerry finds out through Hope that Jessica was also once under Kilgrave's influence. So this is something. If Jerry knew about Jessica's superpowers, that's one thing. But did not seem like she knew that Jessica was this tied into this guy. So that opens up some interesting ideas, some interesting story possibilities with Jerry now knowing Jessica's weakness. Jessica is looking for Kilgrave's weakness in this episode. Jerry seems to have found Jessica's, and what she chooses to do with that information is going to be fun to watch.
That actually, now you say it especially that way, it makes me think maybe that's the reason she decided to do this. It's not even that there was this other guy that was like, yeah, totally what happened is that she found out what this person did to Jessica, who technically, I guess, is kind of her friend. And maybe there's
at least her employee, you know, like a high value employee.
And kind of felt like, you know what, I may, you know, now that I know that this happened to you and you're afraid of this guy, maybe I will take it upon me to try and help this girl and find the, you know, get this guy and bring him to justice, because she's actually trying to help her friend now because of she knows what happened, sort of.
How about Jerry's marriage? She doesn't seem that concerned about it, even though her assistant's like, yo, call your wife, she knows. And Jerry just kind of like rolls her eyes, basically.
Yeah, I mean... I love that this is this character. Like, I'm so glad that they, you know, they cast Carrie-Anne Moss in the role.
She's great. She's been really good so far. She's kind of got, like, a Claire Underwood vibe to her, too, which is really good.
I have no idea who that is.
Oh, it's House of Cards. You gotta watch House of Cards.
Oh, yeah, I've not seen House of Cards.
Get on it.
Yeah,
After this.
So much to do, yes, so little time. Yes. The one thing I also wanted to talk about this episode, and it was my own... nerdiness was that, or hopefulness is that, so the moment she walked into a hospital, especially when she was investigating that the accident was in Hell's Kitchen, I was like, so she's gonna run into Night Nurse, right? Like, that's the thing that's gonna happen.
Yeah, that'd be good.
It did not. As my girlfriend pointed out, well, it is during the day, so
right, it's the wrong time.
But there was hope that was gonna happen, but it did not.
That'd be cool. That'd be great. I also liked the pink shirt with the hearts. And just how Jessica was like, oh, I have to wear this. This is awful.
Yeah, not in her color palette that we've seen her be wearing so far. Like, no. not her color, regular color scheme.
No, it's not good. And she, I like when she's talking with the nurse and she's trying to get information out of her. And she's like, yeah, I just transferred here from Seattle Grace. And the nurse is like, oh, like the TV show?
I didn't get that.
Grey's Anatomy reference.
Girlfriend started laughing as soon as she said it. And I was like, I don't get it. And then she's like, TV show. And I was like, she's like, yeah, Grey's Anatomy. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that's funny. I like that. One of the big deals in this episode is that Jessica, you know, she walks away. We have the cockroach metaphor, but she's saying, you know, I have to find Kilgrave's weakness, and she feels satisfied that she's found his weakness by the end of the thing. Do you have a firm grasp on what she means by that?
Finding his weakness, you mean?
On what the weakness is.
Well, she talks, I mean, like, it seems that he doesn't like being anesthetized.
Anesthetized.
Yeah, anesthetized. Thank you.
Yeah,
I'm a writer. That's how.
Yeah,
he doesn't like being anesthetized. So I feel like that could be his weakness. Like, for some reason, maybe because you're groggy, he can't cut. Like, his mind is fuzzy, so he can't use his powers.
Right. And wasn't it something about him being asleep as well? Like, he can't do it when he's sleeping.
No, it sounds like when he's asleep, it's okay, because the doctor was saying it's different brain functions, and what it affects, like what muscles and body affects, is different.
Right.
So he's fine if he's asleep, but if he's like anesthetized, he can't. It sounds like he can't use his powers, or at least he's afraid of being anesthetized.
So we just got to drug him up, get him real drugged up, and we're going
to
take him down.
How do you get close enough to do that, though, is a question. Like, if he sees you coming, game over.
Easy. Sniper rifle with anesthesia trank darts.
You're right. I didn't think about that. I forgot that we're in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, shoot him with an elephant gun with anesthesia.
And there you go. Bada bing, bada boom. Yeah, done.
That'll take him out. So that'll be pretty fun.
So there you go. Episode 3. Show's over.
That's the end. Or it's the end of the Kilgrave arc, at least.
Yeah.
I also caught this, that the dialysis machine that the ambulance driver was on was from, it was called a Baxter hemodialysis machine. Baxter building in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is, or not in the Cinematic Universe anyway, but in Marvel, is associated with Fantastic Four, which is not owned by Marvel Cinematic Universe stuff. Is the Baxter completely unrelated? Did you catch that? Am I all on my own on this one?
Yeah, I didn't think that it was going to be a Fantastic Four thing, just because, of course, like, the, you know, they don't have that that property.
Gotta imagine they're getting it soon.
From everything that we've heard, no, they're not. Fox is just gripping onto that and squeezing it for all they can.
Just digging in. Oh, man. Yeah, that seems like a mistake. Just let it go.
Yeah, let it go.
Let it go. Listen to the song.
You can't have him back anymore.
Oh, God, Kevin. So, yeah, we'll see what's going on there. Anything else from the episode that stood out to you?
I think we hit everything. I mean, I'm very excited to see more of the Luke Cage stuff. I you know... It's great. Like, I like the superpower stuff. That, you know, I'm an action guy, so I kind of really liked the fight scene they had. obviously the Daredevil stuff, I love the action in there. I like that the fights are different, because in Daredevil, he's a trained ninja, so his fighting style is very different, the action is very different. This is much more like bar fight is the way these guys fight, it seems. So I kind of like that there's a bit of a difference there, rather than like a kind of a very cool choreographed ninja fight.
Yeah, I like that too. I like what they're doing with Luke Cage. I think that Mike Coulter is really good. We had one scene in this episode. Most of the scenes on Jessica Jones so far have featured Jessica Jones, but there was one pure Luke Cage scene when Gina, the woman that he was sleeping with in the first episode, she shows up, and you know, he gives her the business and is like, yeah, get out of here. And she's, you know, complaining about the marriage. She's like, we don't even do oral anymore. We're just like, whoa, hey.
Yeah, well, I don't need to, like, okay, calm
we don't need
down,
the details. Don't need the details, lady. It's just the first Luke Cage scene without any other main characters in the mix, and it's just it gives you a little bit of a glimpse into what the Luke Cage show might look like, and yeah. I like it. I want to see more. I like it.
I'm really curious about the evolution of what Luke Cage might become. I mean, we're seeing him and Jessica, you know, together and, you know, kind of building their relationship, it seems like, in this, unless it ends terribly, in which case I guess we won't see her as much. But it would be interesting if the Luke Cage is almost like an extension of this show, just it's mostly from Luke Cage's perspective, and then you kind of get, you know, Jessica every now and then.
Right.
It'd be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll see how that goes. Beyond that, there's some fun stuff with Jessica in this episode, too, of just like her, you know, everything with the neighbors, and she's just not having it with these people. But they're starting to get fleshed out more. I didn't know if they were just going to be like the obnoxious neighbors that you never see, but they are actual characters now, Tidy Whitey's and Robin. I don't know what we want to call Tidy Whitey's.
Creepy, incestual neighbors.
Yeah, I guess his name is Kevin, probably, right?
Oh, no.
I'm sorry.
That would be ridiculous if their names were Robin and Kevin. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that'd be scary.
Yeah, I would not be on board for that.
Oh, here's one more thing is when Jessica is searching through the hospital records for Kilgrave and there's no John Doe or anything like that, a name that we see is Rava Connors. And the picture of this woman, is that the same picture that she found in Luke Cage's bathroom?
Yes, that is the same picture in Luke Cage's bathroom.
So what's up with that?
So clearly there is some kind of connection there, because I was wondering that too, because like we saw her taking the pictures before. And it's like, oh, it's because, you know, Andre hired me to do this. And then she tells later on, like, oh, Andre never hired you. So what's the connection here to her and Luke? Like, why is she taking those pictures? She clearly got upset when she saw that picture in Luke's medicine cabinet. So there's definitely something there. Like, we know she died in a bus crash. We saw, like, that bus flipping over. It could just be a guilt thing that, like, you know, only, what was it? Like two people, one was DOA, like one was dead on arrival and it was her.
Yeah.
So maybe she feels guilty. Like there's definitely something there, that's going on, which if that is the case, I mean, she's got to tell him soon, right?
Yeah, like,
that is not a secret you can keep for very long before it all is going to blow up in your face.
Right. But I mean, that's good drama. So of course that's where it's going to go.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So we'll see. The next episode is called It's Called Whiskey. and spoiler alert, by the time we're recording that, it will be Saturday night. And the drink in my hand will also be called whiskey.
I actually, my birthday was not too long ago, and I got a fancy whiskey from one of my friends, so I might crack that open tonight and have a little bit as well.
You know what? I think that that's fair. It's going to be an episode called It's Called Whiskey. We will be recording it nighttime, my time. It's like 6 o'clock by the time that you'll be recording it. You're past
chapter 5.
You're past 5. I think you're good, so we'll maybe have a little bit of a boozy podcast for the next one.
Sounds good to me.
Anything else on this one, Kevin? Are you ready to wrap?
I think we're ready to go on that one.
Yeah, and we're going to be keeping these podcasts a little bit shorter than some of these other post-show recaps podcasts tend to go, just to keep the trains on schedule. So follow Kevin on Twitter. He's at Kev Mahadeo. I'm at Round Howard. I think it's got to be hashtag Unbreakable Luke Schmidt.
Oh, yeah, Unbreakable Luke Schmidt, 100%.
Yeah. And again, shut up, Tim. Get on that, please.
Yeah, someone, please. Yeah.
Just listen to this music you're listening to right now and apply some Luke Cage words to it, and that will be the way to go. All right, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow for another episode of the Jessica Jones Podcast. Take care. Bye, Kevin. See you in a couple hours.
See you in a couple hours, buddy.
That's going to be, fascinating transition. Yeah.